Hello and welcome to Up the Smut podcast. I'm your host, Kate, and I am here with, for the first time in an author interview, Michaela. Hello, Michaela.
Hello.
Michaela's very excited to be here. You'll see why in a little bit. And then we are joined by Emily Rath, who is an amazing author who is new to me, but Michaela is the one who brought me on board the Emily Rath train. So,
welcome.
Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
And we would like to disclose that we actually recorded this entire podcast last night and the recording didn't save. So we are re-recording an interview, but it's going to be new and fun and also weird because we're going to know a lot about Emily and you're going to wonder how we know so much about her. And it is because we got to talk to her for an hour last night and we became best friends. And now I am a character in her upcoming book. No, I wish I was. Honestly. I fucking wish I was. Actually, I wish I was a character in the book she already wrote.
Oh, yeah. That's the dream.
Yeah. So Emily is an author of so many books. She has written spicy Bridgerton-esque books. She has written an MM Omegaverse that just came across my feed. And I immediately downloaded it. So it's on my KU right now to be read. MM Omegaverse is like my kryptonite. I didn't know you'd written one of those. And now she is writing contemporary sports polyamorous romances. It's a new subgenre. It's just been created. It's wonderful. Yes. But Emily is the queen of tropes. And you will see why as we go. She is just not checking them off the list. We are here to discuss Emily's new-ish. I actually don't know when it came out. I don't pay attention to release dates.
It came out the end of March. It came out March 20th. So we're about 8 weeks in.
Awesome. Well, it has been an amazing 8 weeks I have seen from your Instagram feed. You are topping the charts in Amazon and various countries, which is how we'll talk about the book that you are topping the charts with in a second. But how has that been? Like seeing number one, like next to your book.
It has been absolutely bananas. It's been bananas. My goal with the release of this book, because I was really, really pushing marketing, because, you know, I'm indie pub, so it's literally all me. I'm a one-woman show. So it was bananas. My goal was I wanted to taste the Amazon top 100. I just wanted a taste. And so I figured the only chance that was going to happen was on release day. And so I have, you can go in like my TikTok history. I have a couple of videos from March 20th release day where it was like, I did it. It was around lunchtime and I was number 99 in the store. And I just like the double cancer couldn't hold it in anymore. And I just broke like a dam, and I'm not a crier, and I was just like sobbing in my car because that's all I wanted was a taste of the 100, and I figured it was gonna get right in there and then get right back out, you know, like which so often happens. Like I was gonna have a shining 3 hours of being in that top 100 and then it would fall out, and then it just kept going up and up and up, and it's been bananas. It's, you know, changed your life level of craziness that's happened over the past 8 weeks. So
I can't even imagine, but I know that it's such a big milestone for a lot of authors, especially indie authors, to be able to see those flags next to their names and stuff. So I know, and I know you've hit it in a few different countries now. Like, you know, I saw you number one in Canada and, you know,
Australia.
In Australia. Australia
has been a really
You're welcome. Hello from down under.
Yeah.
It was Michaela.
Very good to me.
One of my friends in Canada is currently reading it. She actually posted about pucking around. I was like, have you read the prequel novella? And she said, no, do I need to? I was like, bitch, yes, you do. That is flavor country. So you guys need to read that definitely, That One Night, which was released a couple of weeks before, wasn't it? My friend Carly was the one who got me into it. Carly's a huge fan. She's screaming right now.
It was actually, That One Night was released a little before Christmas as a newsletter exclusive. It was a way that I was like, you know, what it's just a strategy of indie authors trying to build out your newsletter list, you know, trying to expand that out. So to give like a magnet, right? So free content. So I had it for free for about a month, like the whole month of January, I had it for free through my newsletter. And so it was like small potatoes. No one heard of it. I didn't get that many downloads. Right. And then I put that on Amazon about a month leading up to putting Pucking Around on Amazon. So it's like, I let it be free for about a month. And then I was like, let's try and make a little bit of money on this. And flipped it over to Amazon. And then, yeah, now with Pucking Around, I'm actually going to be doing a signed special edition that'll combine them together. Cause that one night is actually pretty short. Like it's, about 30,000 words, but it's because it includes a 5-chapter sneak peek of Pucking Around. Mm-hmm. And now that Pucking Around is out, it's like, what if I just combine them together so that people can have that little prequel taste? Because it's like what you're saying, for a lot of people reading it on Kindle, it doesn't always open to the page you want it to, which would be like the info page that's like, hey, there's a first book. You know, sometimes it can open you in different spots. So a lot of readers were like, what? There's a prequel? So yeah, I'm thinking of just doing a special edition that's like, they're both together. Here they go. You know, read them both.
Let's make a 700 page book even longer. I love it.
A little bit longer. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. But you know what? Those 700 pages really, really fly by. It's an amazing book. I couldn't put it down. Like, I just ignored my family for the day and a half it took me to read it. I ignore my family at the best of times, but you know, that's just me being me.
So for those who are wondering what book we are talking about, Emily is free to talk about any of her books, but we are specifically here because Michaela and I just over the weekend read Pucking Around, which is Emily's 700-page Why Choose Hockey Romance.
And it's a boy.
Yeah, it's a chunker. It's on your shelf. It's going to take up a good amount of shelf space. So
yeah.
But it is worth it because this book follows Rachel, our heroine, who is a physical therapist. Is she going for her doctorate? I'm not sure how a fellowship works, I'm going to say.
Yeah, so it's more of like sports. Her specialty is actually sports medicine. And so she really is doing more like orthopedic medicine.
Hips and knees, she said, right? Yeah, are her specialty. Yeah.
So it's part of while she's in her residency program, it's a special thing that she has applied to get like real on the job experience with a sports team of wanting to do sports medicine. And actually that's the idea, is I made up this fellowship that connects physical therapists and sports medicine professionals and like connects them to sports teams so that they actually get that on the job experience. So that's the idea, is that she wins this, you know, very competitive fellowship, but it's kind of like she comes in off a wait list. And so the position has already been made. And so she has no idea. She's just like, yes, whatever it is. Yes. And they're like, it's hockey in Florida. And so she's like, all right, let's go. You know? So she's like, don't know anything about hockey. And so she goes down to Jacksonville and it all takes off from there, as it's this Why Choose Hockey Romance, workplace romance. But it was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah. And for those I have read, I actually, around the start of COVID, I went down just a hockey rabbit hole, and I don't even watch hockey. I'm not sure what started it. It was probably a free book at some point, and I just spiraled down a wonderful, wonderful rabbit hole, I should say. Yeah. And so I read probably 17 to 20 hockey romances, and they are usually pretty dirty because it's an alpha male and probably a very cocky alpha male because he's a pro athlete, and so I'm used to like filthy like hockey romances. Pucking Around took what I thought was filthy. I do a lot of hand motions over here, no one can see me. Took what I thought was filthy and then just turned it on its head. Added two more dudes with also filthy mouths. And then the heroine has a filthy mouth, which was honestly amazing to see. Like, I don't know. I was getting a little bit in a funk of heroines who are kind of afraid to speak their mind or who are very, very innocent, quote unquote. And, you know, and now we have Rachel Price. Yeah. Enter Rachel Price, who is just the dirtiest heroine. And she is not afraid to tell men. Fun-filled.
Like, no. There is just... You think that the orcs do buckets of cum? Wait until you read this contemporary hockey Why Choose romance, okay? Because Emily Rath said, orcs, I can do that, but they don't have to be orcs. They can just be hulking men.
So, I will see you an orc, and I will raise you 3 NHL players.
Yeah, one of whom never goes soft.
Yes, yeah.
Another of whom has 4 dick piercings. 4.
Yeah. We've got our Jacob's Ladder.
And then one who's just, who knows, he can pick your ice cream flavor. That's the other one. That's the Taurus, of course. Who knows your favorite ice cream
flavor. Yeah, one never stops coming. One picks the best hockey or best ice cream, and the other one does dick piercings. So
our dirty talking daddy dom.
we got them all. But also for those of you who do like kind of having a list of the kinks or the tropes or whatever, one, like the book does, you do like an AO3 tag situation, right? In your book, which is coming into fashion. And I'm loving it because the tags are always so fucking funny. And so I was cracking up when I was reading yours, and I was like, I have to fucking read this because this is off the wall.
I picked that up from Katie Robert. Does that with every Katie Robert release now, she does that. And I thought the same thing of like, oh, this is so funny, especially the tags. I love coming up with just like wackadoodle tags that are just really funny of like, this isn't possibly an actual tag, but we're doing this. And yeah, so that's a lot of fun doing, you know, the content warnings are important to have in there, but having those tropes and having those tags. And I know this is the first time we're meeting, but when we talked about it last night, we were talking about the Zodiac stuff too, and that was fun that I've put that in there of just, it's just fun. I think it's just fun. It's a way for the readers that want it get to have it. The readers that don't care about it can skim past it, but it's there for people to read and get excited. You know, I've had quite a few readers that they were like, I was on the fence because they're like, you see the cover and the cover is discreet. And so they're like, oh, just like rom-com, workplace, romance, what is this about? And then they're like, they read the content warnings and they're like, hello. And they're like, that's what convinced me to read it. You know, so it's fun. It's fun to put them in there, and those that want it, get it. And those that don't, read right past it and get the surprise of a lifetime as they get to chapter 55, 56. And they learn things about themselves.
Oh, yeah. And they will learn. Yeah, I even, like, as I was going through, I'm like, okay, so we have double penetration, double vaginal penetration. We have the penis piercings. We have light daddy kink, which was a wonderful surprise for me because I love that shit. But it does, for those who are curious, it does stay within, like, sexual context.
Yeah.
Praise kink. Praise the Lord. Yeah. And I love praise kink. And then there's obviously MFM, MMF. MMFM, there's just M's and F's and they're everywhere, and it's except for one M is pretty strictly MF, but
if you read the last book, the collection of novellas at the end, you might see some stuff. There might
growth and change. Yes.
So Emily took a 700 page book, gave it a prequel, and then gave it 5 epilogues.
Yeah.
In a separate book that you can download on KU. So it's like, it just keeps, so that way people weren't scared away by 100 or an 800 page book. It's only 700. But the epilogues, honestly, were, I don't normally like love bonus epilogues. I'm one of those people who's like, I'm kind of happy as it wraps up. Like, I don't necessarily need more of characters, but I read it and I was laughing out loud through these epilogues. And I don't laugh very often when I'm reading books. Like, I might chuckle, but I actually paused, cracked up, texted Michaela, and I was like, I'm genuinely laughing right now at this. I was like, this is unbelievable. I never laugh. So
the epilogues were very much it was very much a love letter to my readers, right? That with the way that my readers embrace Pucking Around, because so often, you know, most authors will do some kind of bonus content or some kind of bonus epilogue. They might link it at the end of the book as a way to like hook you into their newsletter or something. But a lot of times it's like, it's maybe like 1500 words, something spicy, something cute. Someone has a baby, you know, we move on. And I was just like, all of my readers are just like more, more, more. And so that was kind of the same thing of, I put that up for free for about a week in my Facebook group. And so my Facebook group just like quadrupled in size. And so I was giving away this thing for free to like over 3,000 people got this thing for free before I was like, and now let's make some money off of it, you know? But yeah, it very much was like a love letter to readers. Like, if you want it, join the Facebook group, have it for free. And it was so fun. It was so fun to see the reader responses, because I had a Facebook chat room that is still active. And so they were like live reacting in there. And so it was like a night where I didn't get any sleep as I'm just all these people in the different time zones, like my Aussie readers getting it first and being like, ha ha, you know, and they were like, we already are done, you know, as it's keep going through. And so that was a ton of fun. That was a night of lost sleep as we all just like 1 month later, it was about a month after release that came out. And so then we were all just like, I wanted it to feel like a hug. Like I wanted it to feel like the Price family. Yeah, giving definitely. You a hug. And so yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love that it was, yeah, it was five different stories and it was just like, mm-hmm. you got everyone to know more. It wasn't just like fan service throwing like a little bit of bonus. It felt like you genuinely did like create additional stories and, you know, yeah. like gave us more information into the characters somehow, even in the epilogue. So okay, so going off of that, how you were able to give all these men these person like big personalities, all mm-hmm. of these, like it's pretty intimidating, because usually I feel like when you have a polyamorous or like why choose relationship, the men have very, you know, usually you have like the shy guy who's mm-hmm. like a little bit quieter, then you have the bold guy, then you have the grumpy guy, and that's mm-hmm. just that's their personality. They're like one note. They're there to kind of just compliment the heroine and give her a reason to shine.
Yeah.
But I feel like in Pucking Around, you worked really hard to give them all very distinct personalities. But mm-hmm. They're all pro athletes. So at the end of the day, they're all going to overlap a little bit in terms of that like alpha male mm-hmm. persona. So we mm-hmm. have Jake, who is Golden Retriever Boy. He's mm-hmm. The life of the party, the light of Rachel's life. They have so much, they're so in sync with one another. He makes her laugh. Then you have Caleb, who's very stern, jaded daddy. You know, he's mm-hmm. he has the past that he definitely did not, or maybe he did get therapy, but it didn't do a whole lot. You know, he's still a little bit trauma. And then mm-hmm. Mars, who's just grumpy and lonely and
Mars
can't express
him. Like he's
too finished to function is what I joke. He's just, yeah, it's like until you, because my family heritage is Finnish and I've had mm-hmm. a lot of friends through my life, like even studying abroad that were Finnish. And it's like, you have to know Finnish people for a while and you have to understand mm-hmm. them. But it's like, once you understand them, it's like, they're so funny and they're so mm-hmm. warm and they're so welcoming, but you gotta get past that initial Arctic freeze zone, right? I'm like, he's too Finnish to function. And I've had a ton of fun with Finnish readers in particular of being like, this is some of the best Finnish representation that we've seen of like, he is who he is. And he is very warm and very giving and very loving once you get to know him, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, he's basically my ideal hero, is just this like grumpy, kind of closed off, but he's really not. He just doesn't know how to express those emotions. And enter Rachel, who is this sex positive, like force of nature, who knows what she wants, but is also kind of afraid to take it mm-hmm. because of she has famous child trauma. Mm-hmm. I like coined today. I'm like, you know, like, she has a lot of trauma in her childhood and like with the paparazzi and stuff. So she's very afraid to kind of be out there. And so I'm curious how you managed to keep all of these men kind of straight and really complement each other at the same time. Mm-hmm. And obviously straight is in your mind, not straight sexually.
Yeah.
So I was like, bro, no one's straight in this book.
No one is straight. I really do try, because it's exactly what you said, Kate, of I really get frustrated as a reader when I'll read Why Chooses and it's like the men's personality boils down to their eye color. You know, of it's like, oh, this is the one with green eyes. And so you're just like, there has to be more here. And so I feel like part of it is when you're writing a Why Choose like this, it starts with that first question that you have to ask is, whose story is this? Mm-hmm. Right. So I could have made this Rachel's story and I could have had Rachel be the only POV. And we go through it like that. So you think of something like Lola and the Millionaires, where it's overwhelmingly Lola's story. Yeah, you get some of the other POVs peppered in, for sure you do. But it really feels like, whose story is this? It's Lola's story, you know? And I think that's a good example of trying where you've got so many men and trying to make them different. With Omega Versus, it gets easier because you've got designation to work with. Mm-hmm. You've got who's bonded to who, you know, all those types of things. But with this, it was like, all right, I'm going to do a hockey romance. So I have their positions that already set them apart. I'll have physicality that sets them apart. And one of my favorite things to do with Why Chooses, particularly for men, really is to assign those zodiacs. Because it's just a way that you can be like, all right, so what are some caricature types of these zodiac signs? So the fact that, you know, I joke that Jake is too Taurus to function. Like, he is a Taurus. So it's all about comfort and sexuality and luxury and, you know,
food.
And then you go all saying it, food, right? Yeah. The way to his heart is like sex and food, and he'll love you forever. But yeah, so I took kind of some of those caricatures. And once you layer those in, the characters really start to come to life. And then you just be like, well, does he have scars? What color are his eyes? Does he have a dick piercing? You know, so it's like you layer on all those pieces. And I feel like it just makes, when I knew that the story, when I said, whose story is this? When I knew that I was going to say, it's all of their story. That's going to make, number one, a longer book. And number two, you really have to do right by these men to make sure that they have full arcs too. They cannot just exist for, like you said, to move the heroine's arc along. They have to do their own thing. So that's why in a lot of their scenes, she's not even in a lot of their POV scenes. It's them with each other. It's them working on their dynamics. She's not even in a lot of them. And that really kind of helps to frame out that idea of this is all of their story. They're all going on different journeys, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I know that, like, I was joking with Michaela that she didn't, and the listeners will know that Michaela in every podcast episode will pipe up and be like, that character is a Virgo. That character is a Sagittarius. That's her thing.
Yeah.
And Emily took that away from her in this book.
No. I loved it. Okay. So yesterday I went on this massive tangent. I won't bore you guys, but I was like, Sagittarius men, Taurus men, Aries men. Those are my, like, of my body count, those are my three highest hitters. So I just felt like I was having like war flashbacks of every relationship I've had. So reading this book, it was traumatic for me, but we got through it in the end. I did marry a Taurus, lost my virginity to a Taurus in a nightclub, last boyfriend was a Taurus, all of those things. And I think that some of the traits in this book of these people, spot fucking on, honestly, especially the Taurus, like the love bombing of the Taurus, 100%, yeah. 100%. Taurus men, they see you and they're just like, we're in love now. You're like, okay,
you're the one.
We just met. Like, we just, it's fine. You know, like, and they will settle. My husband, he takes 7 to 10 business days to get angry. Like, there's that scene where Jake, no, he does. Like, I'm ready to fucking punch someone. My Mars is in Aries. So I'm like, I'm ready to fight, you know? But my husband, it's like, he's like Jake in the car when he's like, well, what is it? You know, like, he's just been sitting there stewing on it. Just, he's in his head about it. And just,
yeah.
Tell me. And you're like, ugh, I don't know. Like, I'm over it, man. How about you? He's like, no. So I love that. It was a fan service. You were pandering to me and you didn't even know it. So
oh, that's so great. Yeah. It's been fun to see how that's been received. Cause I think we joked in the last recording of some people are like, ugh, you know, kind of like scoffing at me. Like, I had people come into my DMs and tell me that they didn't like it. And it was like,
do you know what? Right. Those people, they're probably Capricorns.
All right.
So if you're listening to this and you do that to Emily, you're a fucking Capricorn and I know it, okay? Love yourself.
Like, all right, but it already happened. What is it?
Zodiac is the Maya Briggs personality for, like, cool girls. That's truly what I believe. Yeah, honestly, yeah. I do it to everyone. I did it to Kate. I actually was going to message Kate's mom. Kate's mom has a bookstagram. She's like massively cool and stuff. She's a Gemini, but we won't hold that against her. And I was gonna be like, what time was Kate born? Because, you know, like, as
a mother, asked her and she doesn't know.
She does know.
She said, check your baby book.
She does
so
know.
So I have to find. No, she was like 3-something. I got to go find my fucking baby book downstairs in the basement.
So yeah. You are Sagittarius rising with a Cancer moon. Did you know that about yourself, Kate? Because I figured that out.
I do now, but I don't know what it means.
I found out where Kate was born. So she's a Virgo sun, obviously.
I'm a Cancer sun, Cancer moon, Libra rising. So.
Yeah, see, I just will do a birth chart of anyone. Like, you can't stop me. You actually can't stop me. So I had, this is a little anecdote. I love talking about myself on this podcast, especially when we've got authors talking about their books. But my daughter was born by C-section, and she's a Leo. And I was like looking at the clock. I literally was on the table open and I looked over. I go, oh my God, she's a Sagittarius rising. And my husband's like, okay, like, you do realize your guts are hanging out at the moment. I'm like, oh, she'll be this okay. She has a Taurus moon. She's got a Taurus moon. She'll be okay. And then my son, he is only a Cancer by 21 minutes. He was born on the solstice. So I would have had to have left him at the hospital if he was a Gemini. It just wasn't going to work for me.
I was talking to my husband about that too, because he's a Pisces. He's a Pisces cusp. Is what Aries, right? Pisces cusp Aries. And so it was just like, oh my God, now everything makes sense. Like, because he's the very last day of Pisces. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you make so much sense.
Okay, so I have this thing with Pisces. I've never slept with a Pisces. Like, ever. And it's pains me. You don't understand. They're the one that got, I've done every other star sign besides them multiple times.
The one that got away.
Yeah, the, like, literally the fish that got away.
The fish it's that, like, got away.
Yeah, for real. I'm like, they're my white whale. And my husband's always like,
your free pass. A lot of people are going to do, like, who's your celebrity free pass? Yours is going to be, I have to find a Pisces. Any Pisces will do. They'll be my free pass.
I don't know. I think I will. That's one of the questions that we've got for you, but we won't spoil that.
So notice I was very quiet during that. I know I'm a Virgo. I know my husband is also a Virgo, and that's all I got.
You've got a Leo sun. It's so
Virgo of you.
Yeah. And a Leo sun. Oh, yeah. My son is a Leo.
My son is a Leo. But this is after me just being a Scorpio and being like, these are all of the people that I've had sex with. Let me, like, write it down. I'll tell you that where, like, what happened, how
we met. We'll dedicate an entire podcast to that for Michaela, for those of you who are interested.
We're going to need about 6 hours, because that's when I'm only talking about the boys. Wait till you hear about the girls.
All right, when I go on vacation in July, you are in charge, and your episode will be a one a day series called Michaela's Sexcapades Zodiac Rising,
like, Zodiac Edition.
But speaking of, I don't know, queer pairings. The remainder of your series, which we talked about, is a combination of MF, then there's MM, then there's MFM, and then there's FFM. And for those of you who don't know, where the Fs and the Ms are is important.
Yeah.
So when you have MFM, it means that the Ms, the men, are separate, and they are not typically engaging with each other sexually. When you have MMF, it means that the swords are crossing. And then I think it gets very complicated in terms of, like, when there's more than, like, four M's and F's, and it's like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. So the idea with, like, my last book in the series will be FFM, and that will be a full polyam. The three of them will all be with each other, right? With the kind of the F in the middle. And then, so my third book, I have hinted about this before, the third book is going to be called Pucking Sweet. That's Poppy's book. So she's the public relations manager for the team. And she's going to have a wild week where she gets some news from her family that kind of sets her on a journey of a fuck it journey. And she's going to literally do it. And it's going to be the issue of the MFM in that is going to be a ton of fun, that it's two players. She makes some choices. She's going to have to live with them. And then it's going to be a lot of fun, because it's almost even hard to describe it as, like, an MFM, because it's really like MFM by curiosity, MMF until they satiate their curiosity, and it'll be like, no, MFM. Like, it's hard to talk of, like, what it is, but I really am going to have a lot of fun with that book of letting queer people go through their queer journeys, right? Of, like, what does this look like? Do I like this or don't? Do I want to experiment? Is it just you, or is it, it's like, what is going on here?
Well, yes.
Yeah, because obviously, no, you go.
Okay.
Do that.
Well, yesterday when we were speaking to Emily, she did this really amazing breakdown, because if you have read all of the books as well as the novellas at the end, there are Easter eggs sprinkled throughout. You were saying that the writing process of a couple of threads that you're having to weave, no spoilers, but I was just going to suggest to people who are going to be going and reading this to really pay attention to some of the secondary characters, because they're definitely going to be popping up soon.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's exciting to me. I love that.
A lot of Easter eggs. Yeah.
I love like a dynastic, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, like, I love a long relationship, obviously, like, you know, Scorpio. So yeah, pay attention to those secondary characters. And we also said, because the next book is just an MF, and that's going to be weird, only having like one dick to play with.
Yes. Yes. So I have joked that it's kind of like the stakes have never felt higher. Of people are just, one of the reasons people love pucking around is because of the spice. And I did some creative things with the spice. And for a lot of my readers, like so many of my readers, they are telling me this is their first hockey romance. This is their first why choose romance. This is their first why choose with MM romance. And so they're just like
a baptism of fire,
brains exploding. And it's like, love that journey for you, right? Love that journey for you. But then it's like, so people think that book is so, so spicy, and I'm following it up with an MF, and there's so much pressure of like, oh my gosh, the spice is going to be different. It has to be different, because there's only two of them. So that has been a big pressure point for me as I think about what I want to do with Tess, how I want it to be still fun and still exciting and still deliver that feeling of spice, but it's going to be different because there's only two people as opposed to four. You can have so much fun with four people, especially if the four people are queer. Are you kidding me? You can have so much fun. But yeah, so Ryan is gonna live his best life. he's gonna go through some things. He's gonna go through some changes with Tess. He's gonna try some new things with Tess. We're gonna have hopefully a lot of fun in this reverse age gap romance that we're gonna do.
I did say I think that she is gonna absolutely fucking steamroll him. Like, it's, destroyer. You know, when you're sort of like the older girl and you're like, this is another time, it was a Libra guy. I took his virginity. I didn't realize because he was like playing real cool about it. And then he stole my underpants off my clothesline.
What?
Yeah. So like, I don't know if I'm like, I'm going to try to separate myself from, don't put that in the book, please, because I won't be able to.
We're going to have, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, because what you have with Ryan is like, he is young, right? He is young. He's 22, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like what's important is when you look at these guys and you look at the careers that they can have, in so many cases, they have to grow up fast. Mm-hmm. They're often, if they're really going to be invested in this and if they're going to try and make it to the show, right? Make it to the NHL, they're often not living at home. They basically are doing boarding school situations where they're doing like junior league stuff. One of my friends, another author, you know, USA Today bestselling author, Jessa Wilder. Jessa is a billet. And so Jessa lives up in Canada. She has billeted for years. So she always has like one to two. I think she never usually has more than two, but she has these billeted players that they're junior league. And so she basically is like a host mom for them as they're trying to make their dreams come true. And so there's a sense to which like he is young in age and he likes Mario Kart and he likes mac and cheese. And there are things about him that are going to age him down, but that's going to be part of the process of learning. Like, it's a tough life. It's a tough life. They have to grow up fast. They have to learn about finances fast. They have to learn about independence fast. And, you know, so you'll have this kind of quote unquote young guy that he'll have layers too, you know, and that you'll see kind of this idea of opposites attract, or can he be the right kind of fit for a woman that's a 33-year-old divorcee that's lived, you know, lived a good section of her, a decade longer than him, you know? But so I think that's going to be a lot of fun, is to nuance that a bit and really try and highlight what these guys go through, to the fact that a lot of them are like retiring by the time they're like 24, 25. Yeah. Because it is such a strain on the body. Their peak moment of being able to really make it in the show. They are young. And so that's kind of part of what I'm trying to highlight too, is these young guys that are thrust in this spotlight and have to perform at this top level.
Yeah, and life as they know it is kind of like over when the like their dreams a lot of the time of playing hockey ends when most people's other young adults' lives are just kicking off.
Starting.
So it's very interesting to then they're like starting over at 25 or and having to find entire new careers, and it's like
so it's like, what am I gonna do? Am I gonna coach? Am I gonna— that's kind of a storyline that I brought in for like Ilmari, of this idea of he actually has a long shelf life when you look at the strain on the body for NHL goalies. It used to be that goalies could continue to play into their 30s, but because of the way the game has evolved, the way even their equipment has evolved, it is such a strain. That's why I put in all of that about his hips and about his knees. It is such an overwhelming strain on the hips and knees that these guys are retiring young because their bodies physically cannot cut it anymore. And so that's kind of part of me, my love of the sport and my love of kind of the technique, the real true skill, the science, the medicine, trying to pull all of that in different ways to really give readers this feel of like how complicated it is and how nuanced it is. And what the idea of like, your time is so limited in this chance that you have to play. Now, some guys go and they play for like 15 years or something, or 15 seasons, but that's getting more and more rare that you really... you have injuries taking you out, or it's just the strain on your body. You've only got about good, like 4 good years in you before you're done. So I've really been trying to highlight that kind of stuff in the story as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it comes through because sometimes when you read a hockey romance, like I said, I've read a lot of them. Sometimes when you're reading them, they're hockey players, but it's not a hockey book.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of it takes place maybe out of the season or at the end of a season, or, you know, the heroine attends a couple games, or the other hero attends a couple games, and that's kind of the look you get. But in your book, you can tell that you're a lover of the sport because you can, you're really going into some of the details, and like she's watching practices and Caleb is the equipment manager. And so we get kind of like that side of things. And also, you know, he's a warning of how things can go and how things can change in the blink of an eye, and your career can be over. Yeah. So I think that definitely comes through in your book. Like you can tell that you know what you're talking about. You're not avoiding talking about the sport to avoid having to do research or anything like that. You're taking it very seriously.
It was kind of a bit controversial because in some cases there's a whole world, like even some of my friends that are also hockey romance writers, they don't like writing, or, you know, you'll see readers all the time. Readers will make TikToks, or they'll make reels where they're like, if you show me these athletes playing the sport, I'll just read past it. You know, so whether it's football romance or hockey romance or soccer romance. So I was taking a gamble that I really was like, we are going to put the hockey front and center here. Like, you're going to get a romance, but you're also going to get all this behind the scenes stuff. And like, I'm, for better or worse, I'm going to teach you a little bit about hockey. And that, like, I swear to you, I have read some sports romances, and maybe you have too, where you're like, I couldn't even tell you what sport he played. You know, like it's just so tangential to the actual plot of the book.
Yeah. You're like, I know it's a sports romance, and I've done that. There's a series where she has like a character from a bunch of different sports, and when someone wants the hockey one, I don't know which book it was. I have to go and find the guy with the hockey stick on the cover. Great book, but very much like like you talked about, like the point of view is from the other hero or the heroine. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really ever go into his point of view unless it's furthering the plot of the non-hockey player. And so the only time the hockey really comes up is when it creates a conflict within the relationship, as opposed to like an appreciation of the sport by the other character. I am curious though. So you kind of went in with just a bang, just opened up your sports romance series with a reverse harem, which we've talked about is actually, it's not really a reverse harem, which kind of implies that, like you said, that the heroine or the person at the center of the harem is the focus of the book. And that's not really the case here. It really is kind of a polyamorous relationship, especially since you have Mars, who's, we talked about, as the metamor. He's with Rachel, but he's not with Caleb and Jake necessarily. And I'm wondering what do you think is so alluring about, like, why choose romance? Why have these polyamorous relationship books kind of taken off in the community right now? What is drawing people towards them?
You know, I think this is going to get into a little bit of like my other life. I am a political scientist. And so there's a whole idea within political science and sociology and psychology, the idea of social constructivism, right? Social constructivism is this idea that we as a society construct our own reality. So the idea of something like monogamy is a social construct. Gender is a social construct. Sexuality is a social construct, you know, and we reinforce them by saying men, you know, like once upon a time in Western culture, men wore dresses. Have you seen pictures of Henry VIII? You know, and then we change it over time of like men wore high heels with buckles and wigs and makeup. Those social constructs change all the time. And so I feel like what you're really seeing is this idea for so many people. And I give Rachel a lot of voice in this, where she's kind of leading the others along. She's a catalyst for this, of talking about this idea of like the idea that one singular person can meet all of your needs, every single one of them. They can be the partner that you need. They can be the financial partner that you need. They can be the romantic partner that you need. They can be the social partner that you need. Really, one single person can fulfill all your needs as a human for the whole of your life, right? And so you think of someone like me. I got married young. I was like 22. I met my partner at 19. Are you kidding me? I'm still with that same person as if I've had no growth over a period of 10 years. That I could realize that there are other things that I need from my life that one singular person can't meet, right? And so I feel like so many of my readers that have flooded to my comments, that has resonated with them so much, of this idea of, I love my partner. I would never want to leave my partner, but they do not meet all my needs. One person can't. We're too complicated, right? But social constructivism has constructed a reality that we must have monogamy. Anything else is taboo. It must be MF. Anything else is taboo, right? So I feel like there's such a space for people to escape into Why Choose Romance right now, where this is part of the deconstructing of reality, the reconstructing of reality. As you know, the fact that my book, a queer polyamorous Why Choose Hockey Romance, has topped the charts in multiple countries for over 8 weeks, like, I'm not minimizing it when I say this is how social constructs change, right? That people can look at this and be like, the Price family, love is love. Let people love the way that they want to love. I feel the same way, that not one single person can reach all of my needs, right? That's how social constructs change. And so I feel like what you're seeing, I think you see the same kind of things in like the ex-evangelical movement. Just how many people, particularly here in the US, I don't know if it's the same, Michaela, in Australia, there's a massive, particularly for women, ex-evangelical movement of, we grew up Christian in these very strongly American Christian evangelical households, communities, school systems, and we are breaking out of it. So we are breaking out of purity culture. We're breaking out of all these taboos that we're not allowed to be confident in the bedroom. We're not allowed to be sexual persons. We're not allowed to have wants and needs that get a little kinky, right? All of this, I think, is connected to these broader conversations of how books create a space for us to start challenging these social constructs. And it's how the social constructs change. If that makes sense.
No, that, absolutely. That you can tell you're a professor.
Yeah, I went off there. This was new content from last night.
And then this is me. It's just like, there will be world peace when men admit to their bisexuality. Like, that was just like, just right? You know,
like, there will be world peace of like, just let people live, right? And part, like, I know that we talked about it a little bit. I feel like the queerness journey that I have been on, like, so my journey as an author is, so much of this becomes a challenge of, if you're wanting to tell these stories, you have to come out to tell them. And so part of me being so fearlessly and aggressively queer positive in my work is the fact that, number one, I live in Florida. And if you know anything about Florida politics right now, you know that it is absolutely draconian, the laws that they are passing. Like, it, we are not far off from trans and non-binary and queer persons in Florida fleeing the state. We may have to go as far as Canada. Canada is already has already said we can seek asylum there because this country is not safe for us, right? When you look at the draconian laws that are being passed. And so the fact that I, to tell the stories the way that I want to tell them and to be unapologetically queer in my own life has meant that I've had to boldly be unapologetically queer in my writing. Mm-hmm. And it's scary. It's a scary space to be in when you think of, like, I live here in Florida. They could come after me. They could put me on a list, right? But the beauty of being an indie author, being an author, you know, in the 21st century is, like, I don't have to stay here. I can move and I can keep doing this. I can keep, you know, it has almost started to feel like it's becoming a form of social revolution, you know, of, like, I'm going to dare to be unapologetically queer in my writing. I'm going to let queer people live their best lives in my story. And I'm going to have this set in Florida on a big stage where you have these public figures where everyone around them just accepts them for who they are, right? It's fiction. It's not the reality we live in. In the state of Florida, it is not the reality we live in. We are hiding. We are mobilizing. We are ready to start protecting each other. I have very real conversations I'm having with some of my non-binary friends where they're talking about needing to move, right? One of my non-binary friends is looking at having to move over the border into Georgia, and they'll commute down into Florida to continue to do their job, right? Because it is not safe for them here. So it's crazy to feel like you have to take that position with something as on the face, as silly as a hockey romance. But when you look at the broader conversation of what's happening right now, globally, right? It's not insignificant. And I really have felt like I'm carrying the weight of that. The longer I stay up at the charts where I am, and the longer attention gets drawn to me, it is a scary position to be in because of the state that I'm in and because of the state of politics right now. Yeah, I can shut up. I could go on for ages.
I was going to say that, I mean, along those lines, that I'm so used to reading polyamorous relationships set in worlds where it is acceptable, you know, set mm-hmm. in fantasy worlds or set in Omegaverse situations where it is normalized for someone to have mm-hmm. a pack and to have multiple partners. And even when I've read contemporary romance with multiple partners, it's usually three people total. You know, it's usually just two guys and a woman, and it's a little bit easier to normalize that in a contemporary world. But you definitely took out a challenge with
Market spaces. So it's
dark romances. Yes.
Dark romance. So it's like they already live on the margins. They're a motorcycle club. They're a mafia group. So to feel like I'm taking someone as sweet and precious as Angel Jake, right? Of like, I'm just like an NHL superstar, and him having to be like, I think I'm queer. Oh my God. You know, like, what is this going to mean to my career and my life? And, you know, so there is a level of realness to my story that some of these other contemporary romances that so often the Y chooses are set on the margins.
You're right. That most of the time when it isn't contemporary, it's happening with people who are like, I dare you to tell me what I'm doing is wrong. You know, like murderous billionaires or like murderous mafia men or murderous motorcycle gangs. And it's like, tell them they're wrong. You have like these sweetheart NHL players who live in the public eye and whose career depends on mm-hmm. the public liking them. And yeah, the NHL is not necessarily, I mean, is any pro athlete sport, but or pro sport athlete, whatever.
Pro sports in general is not a bastion of queer acceptance, right? No. They're not a bastion of accepting women in the sport. They're not a bastion of accepting anything queer in the sport. Mm-hmm. You have seen movements, you have seen shifts, you've seen some sports doing better than others. So exactly what you're saying, if it's like there's such a level of reality to what I was doing of like so much why choose that's contemporary, they already exist in the margins. So why not also add this on? So to have this be centered in the way that it is.
And we talked about how that's kind of part of the reason why this book is so long is partly because of, you know, you have four people who are sharing the stage, but then mm-hmm. also because they are going on these queer journeys. Mm-hmm. And then there is this like this conflict of them having to come out in multiple stages, like mm-hmm. come out as seeing somebody, you know, like Rachel works for the team. and these are team members. So coming out in that sense, coming out as Jake and Caleb as being queer, in terms of like an MM relationship. And then the next level of coming out as a polyamorous relationship and then coming out to the public eye. So it's like, this book needed to be 700 pages.
Like even when she had the conversation with Miles, she's like, I'm with Jake and Caleb and I also want to be with you. And he's like, what the, like, you know, that really sort of, that was the first challenge, you know? So kind of marrying those two parts of herself together and sort of seeing where he fit into everything as well.
Yeah.
This book is really just a, like stages of coming out.
Stages of coming out, and I think stages of communication, and that's I feel like for polyamorous readers especially, I was flooded, you know, at the early release of this, of polyamorous readers saying like, thank you for showing how messy it is, how real it is, how complicated it is, right? And this idea of balance, a lot of my readers, they only wanted to see a reality where it's either her with all of them separately or all of them are together. And so the fact that Ilmari is a metamour to these other two, that was really complicated for a lot of my readers to understand and appreciate. Whereas I had polyamorous readers that were like, thank God someone is moving that needle in that direction of, if it's balanced to us, then it is balanced. We don't need your opinion on whether you think it's balanced. If we're happy, leave us alone.
Yeah.
You know, don't question it. Don't argue. Don't form your own opinions about, like, so many of my readers have opinions about, like, well, Jake settled, right? They read that one night and they fell in love with Jake and they're like, I want him to have his happily ever after. And his happily ever after is monogamous. He loves Rachel so much, he should get Rachel.
Okay. Well, as a reader, I just, like, I want to tell the author what I thought about her book, obviously. But I felt like Jake was someone, he had so much love to give. Like, Jake loves fucking everyone. Like, he loves the man who sold him his coffee in the morning. He loves Caleb. He loves Mars, despite, like, Mars being like, fuck off, you know, like, but then obviously Mars loves him. Jake is just someone that I felt like he was the one who, even though, you know, he came into it, he was straight, he Seattle girl, all of that stuff. Like, Jake's evolution, it just made so much sense. Like, Jake was like, I love you all. Like, let's do this damn thing. You know, he was the one that he got his happily ever after. He got it four times, you know, like with himself as well, because he really had that kind of self-actualization, you know, and he grew so much. Like, I love Jake. I fucking love, love Jake, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I feel like he's such a good poster boy for a polyamorous journey, right? Of where you start with that one night and you think, okay, like, so many of my readers were like, I'm nervous. Like, you can even see it in my reviews, how many people were like, I am so nervous because I want it to be their happily ever after. And so what I've really tried to nuance as you move through is, like, he did get the girl. He got the girl.
Boy.
And he got the boy. And he got the boy. And he got the dog.
I was going to say the dog. Yes.
Yeah. He became who
he was. Not in a weird way.
But he became who he was always meant to be. And our journey, you know, where he starts in the beginning of, he does come off as this very straight man, monogamous man, and where he ends up, that it's like so happy. And like, by, you know, by the time we get to Pucking Ever After, we've got babies and we've got family and we've got, you know, all those pieces, that it's like, we don't know what our life journey is going to look like, any of us, you know? And so, especially when you think of, like I said, you know, the fact that, you know, me being with my partner at 19, married by 22, like, life is so complicated and you have no idea where you're going to be or what your ultimate evolution of your life is going to look like, what your relationships will look like. And yeah, I think we need to open up space to show these kinds of stories in all their messiness and just appreciate them for what they are. And like, we can want to put our monogamy lens on it and be like, no, Ilmari is settling. Ilmari just wanted Rachel. He didn't want the others. And it's like, no, he did. He did want the others. He just wanted them differently, you know? Or Jake is settling. He should have just had Rachel. And it's like, no, he didn't settle for her. He got more than he ever could have imagined, you know? But part of that is our monogamy lens, that social construction, right? Of, we have this lens of monogamy that clouds everything. And it, and we have to understand the impact that a monogamy lens, whether we think we have one or not, all of us have one, because that's how strong this social construction is. And we have to be able to see through it or see around it, you know, to enjoy these kinds of stories for what they are, I think.
Yeah, especially when, it definitely, a lot of people, when I said I was reading it, they were like, love this book, but I felt like Ilmari deserved his own book with like his own heroine. But hearing you talk about it like this, and it, for Ilmari, like it, he got the girl, but he also got the family. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a man who doesn't have a lot of people around him. He's very, like, not sheltered is the wrong word, but he's very, like, isolated. Not intentional. Yeah, isolated. He's very,
finished. Like,
yeah, exactly. And so he got the girl, but then he got, like, two best friends, which was amazing for him. So his happily ever after just looked very differently. It looked like it wasn't just, oh yeah, he found someone to have sex with and marry and now they're happy. It was like, no, he found two men that he could open up with, and for him that seemed almost on level with him finding Rachel, because it was like he really did not have that. He was so used to isolating himself from his team. He did not have family, or was not in contact with family. So I think his story was, I don't know, one of the but nicest.
Like, Caleb is, he was just, he got everything. Like, there was at no point was someone like, oh, Caleb got the, he's like, Caleb got the fucking boy. He got the dick piercings. He got the girl. He's in the beach house. He's got his favorite ice cream. Like, it's just, Caleb was living. But you know what? Sagittarius men don't deserve that. So Emily Rath, that is a little bit of fiction there. Yes, I am talking about my Sagittarius ex-boyfriend again. Stop messaging me, Aiden.
But it's funny, like, even the you saying that, though, of bringing up Caleb is, like, depending on, this so often happens, right? Readers, like, whether we want to or not, we have favorites, right? You pick a harem and you can think, like, I have a favorite in that harem. And so that's kind of what readers have done. Of like, if readers are all in on Jake, they feel like he settled. If they're all in on Ilmari, they feel like he settled. If they're all in on Caleb, they're like, yes, polyamory, right? So it depends on it. You can see those lenses in action, right? So if where you're really honing in is the queer man that wants it all, then when he gets it all, when you go in knowing he wants it all, when he gets it all, you're like, yay, he completed his journey. But when you're starting at these other ends with these seemingly straight men that look like they're quote unquote settling to get the girl, you know, then it's like, oh, I that's kind of the joke that I have said of like, your monogamy is showing. Like, your lens is informing how you feel about this very complicated relationship, you know? But it's fun. It's fun to dissect these lenses and feel like, I don't know, we can all grow from, like, as weird as it seems to be, like, this quirky, chaotically queer hockey romance. People, so many readers have been like, I learned things about myself, right? And like, that's really cool to feel like a book can have that effect of like, how do I feel about monogamy? How do I feel about queerness? So many readers saying this is their first MM book, you know? And they're like, I liked it. I was turned on. I enjoyed it. Like, I was rooting for them, you know? So all these different layers come into it of like, that's what's most wild to me of like a kooky, queer hockey romance can have these kind of conversations that get started. I feel like it's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. I mean, this has been, and again, people, we talked last night and half of this is like entirely new conversation.
Yeah.
Like that whole bit is like, we did not have that conversation last night. So this is like wonderful to that we can even talk twice in a week about the same things and come out with a different conversation every time.
And the whole joke is though, Kate's like, we'll keep this short. This isn't short.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. No,
we get on for another hour. I'm sorry.
No,
this is longer than last night. We are longer than last night now, and we still got obviously one of the best questions to go, which is, and we asked this last night, so Michaela and I know Emily's answers, but we also this time she could change it. Yes, but this time we also came up with our own answers. So Emily, if you don't remember, we did write down your answers.
Okay.
But you're welcome to change it. What is your ideal reverse harem situation? Polyamorous situation.
So last night
Who's your Wang Gang?
Yeah, last night I put together like a truly chaotic mix of, I feel like, what did I say? I said Tom Hardy, I said Mr. Darcy, Joe Manganiello's version of Alcide from True Blood, because I wanted some shifter energy, and 1990s era Denzel Washington was my dream harem. And I don't know. I feel like if I were going to add to it this evening, just for a little bit of taste and zest, I would say, because I am a queer person, I really feel like I need to add in Zoe Kravitz, the character she plays in Big Little Lies. That's like my dream girl. So just all of it. So I would add her in to the harem to tweak it a little bit.
I love that. Yeah.
You didn't answer it from your ends. Who is in your harems?
No, yeah. Michaela, you go. Who is I'm very curious. I don't know who is in your harem, and I am ready to be confused.
Okay, well, Alexander Skarsgård, and I did make the joke last night that I recently found out that he had a baby, and I'm not the mother of it, so I'm still working through that. He's punched out a bunch of kids, and he's just short king, and this is like the fan service to my 17-year-old self, and that's Trent Reznor. From Nine Inch Nails. He's a Taurus. Duh. Alexander Skarsgård's a Virgo. So I feel like he would make all of the plans and be like Swedish. Yeah. Like he would be my Mars. But Trent Reznor has 5 kids and I'm not the mother of any of them as well. So that's another thing. I'd need a Pisces man in there. But I just Googled Pisces celebrities and it wasn't a vibe. Like it was just
headless.
So if you're a Pisces man out there, don't fucking come near me because I don't want to know.
There's a reason you've never been with a Pisces. Maybe they're supposed to be the one that got away.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, yeah. I mean, I guess. And then I'd probably go, maybe like Pedro Pascal, I guess. And I'm gonna need some time to think of my girls. So we'll go to Kate for her harem, and then I'll do my girls.
Mine crossed into animation. And I just want to say, I picked these men all for me. I gave no thought as to whether they would get along with each other. And once I built it, I was like, this is not a swords crossing situation. All these men. They fucking hate each other, but they will love me.
I could like literally right now. I could add the Fox version of Robin Hood.
Oh yeah,
I can add him to my harem, 100%.
I feel like he'll just slide right in there. He's kind of like a people pleaser, you know.
Yes, yes.
He's not going to cause any trouble.
There's no reason he needed to be that attractive. And then that they did it again in Zootopia with Nick Wilde. Are you kidding me? Either of them, either Robin Hood or Nick Wilde.
They knew what they were doing. Like, there's no way.
One or the other can be in my harem. But anyway, your harem. Let's hear it.
Okay. So first is Inuyasha.
Okay.
He is an animated half demon cat, half human.
Yeah.
He has ears. I'm a cat ears. I'm very into that. Long white hair. Mm.
Love it.
Love it. He is grumpy as can be. Also love that. Now it is Tom Hardy, specifically from Mad Max. The new movie.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, also is him in the MySpace photos. You know the ones that I'm talking about where he's in the underpants? I'm putting that on the stroke. I'll Google it.
No. Okay. That's going to end up in the slides on Instagram for this episode. Then Nick from New Girl. Oh, no. Don't show me those photos. Take them away from me. No, that's why I specified from Mad Max.
Specifically from Mad Max. Yes.
Yes, because I watched that movie and I'm just like, that is a good looking man. And he is disgusting in that movie. He has not showered in years. Still here for it. But yeah, Nick from New Girl. Also dirty. Different kind of dirty. He could shower. He chooses probably not to. Then Keo from Fruits Basket. Also grumpy.
Yeah.
But he was so devoted to Toru, and I have been in love with him since I saw him when I was like 13, when I read the books. I own the books. They're up on my bookshelf right now. It's getting very dark in my room, so I look like a ghost on camera, but I can't go turn on the light. If I was going to pick a woman to join, because I'm not against it, It would be, what is it, Mila Jovovich from Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yes.
Yeah, I watch Resident Evil probably once every other month, probably 6 times a year, and she can get it.
Gorgeous.
She is gorgeous. Yeah. And I want her specifically from Resident Evil, where she can kick ass.
So, yes.
There we go. Well, that's my harem.
I want my Zoe Kravitz from Big Little Lies, mainly because of the fashion that her character wears. Like, it's all of it. It's the micro tattoos, it's the hair, it's the fashion, it's like the granola yoga girl, like all of it. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you've created my dream girl. Yeah. So I feel like if there was going to be MM action in my harem, it would probably be between Robin Hood and Tom Hardy. Like, I feel like Denzel wouldn't go there.
I'm not against that image, honestly, in my head right now. I'm all here for it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to turn on a light.
This is every week. It's like,
no, it's not. Leave me alone, bully.
Your room gets really dark.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, as we have been talking, I have pounded a can of cheap wine.
Fuck yeah. So there's this
they're like, oh, like I was in a Discord chat earlier today and people were like, one of the people in the Discord chat was having to post questions for people too nervous to talk to me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I am braless,
yep,
in a sweater I cut drinking canned wine.
Like, you can ask me anything.
Yeah. You're talking to like, you can ask me anything.
There's this new, like, well, cocktail's not the right word, but it's literally a can, like, you know, a proper can, and it's 3 standard drinks of a margarita. So I'm like, yeah, I need to get fucking on that immediately.
Like, yeah, well, these mothers cans, help her. These cans are half a bottle of wine.
Oh my god.
They come from this pizza place. Yeah, they come from this pizza place. And so my husband got pizza and he got me one of these cans of wine. But yeah, it's like, anyway, it's just funny that people are like, oh, I can't approach you. It's like,
are we wrapping it up?
Yeah.
No, you were supposed to tell us if you're woman.
Oh. Okay, huh.
Or women.
Yeah. Okay, so my women. I'm actually gonna go Charlize in Mad Max.
Ooh,
okay.
Yes. I shaved my head.
Love it. Yeah.
I looked really hot with a shaved head. I've got a good shaped head. And obviously a lot of self-confidence. Alexander Daddario.
Been in
like Baywatch. You know, that sort of like, I could definitely undo her, I think.
This is not the first time you have brought her up specifically from Baywatch.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes. This is a conversation we have had before. And I agree.
I'm gonna say Sailor Venus. Because she could like do my hair and stuff. We'd be like real like lippy together, you know what I mean? Like, it'd just be like a really cute time, I think.
You have a huge harem.
Yeah.
It just grew. Yeah.
I got a lot of holes, baby. On that note. Thank you for listening.
Okay. So we'll start wrapping up. So Emily, you have in June, I believe you said, you are going to be featured in the queer anthology called Queer and Cute.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what story is going to be in there?
Yes. So,
and what it benefits as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The Queer and Cute Anthology. It's a collection of about, I think it's like 34 or 35 authors. That's going to be coming out June 30th. It is available for pre-order for Kindle Unlimited. It'll be in paperback form as well. So there's about 35 of us in there. The story that I am specifically doing, it's 5,000 words, which for me, a person that writes long, it was torturous to do only 5,000 words, but it is Harrison and Somchai's Meet Cute. So if you've read the Pucking Around series, you know that Harrison is Rachel's twin brother. And so this is set about 3 years before the events of that one night. Rachel is in it very briefly, but it's basically Harrison and Somchai and how they meet. And it's so cute. It's so queer and wonderful. All the stories feature queer meet cutes. So yeah, and all the proceeds go to a transgender rights group here in the U.S. So again, bringing it back to me being a person in Florida, knowing I won't make a dollar, only trans right activist groups will make a dollar, feels good, right? Like, sending my readers to go and push that as someone who lives in Florida, like, fuck you, Florida. Yeah, I won't make a dollar. Trans kids will make a dollar. So that's great.
And then, so yes. Obviously I'm going to be buying that. Like 34, 35 stories. And I don't, I love anthologies, but I always tend to miss them because they are available for kind of a short period of time before authors get them, their stories back and get to publish them on their own. I feel like I always miss them. So I'm putting in a Google alert for that one because I can't think of anything more fun to read than 34 or 35 queer stories. So
yeah, queer meet cutes.
Yeah, queer. Okay, yeah.
So and there's like there's monster meet cutes. There's contemporary. There's, you know, all the different aspects of queerness that are in there. But yeah, so there's 35 of us. We could not be more different in the kinds of stories that we're telling. There's, you know, plus size positivity. All, you know, just all of it. All of it. Mm. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And then you're busy in August. You are, that is when the second book in the Jacksonville Rays series comes out, Pucking Wild. That's the one we were talking about earlier. The age gap romance with Tess, Rachel's best friend, and Ryan, who we get to see them meet in Pucking Around. It was so cute.
And he puts a soccer ball into her head and they have a meet cute moment at the beach. Yes. So we're going to expand on that dramatically. And then that comes out in August.
And also, though, I saw that you announced something today, some big news about a signing in August.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I will be, it's officially official. I actually have two events coming up, officially official. I will be at Steamy LitCon, which is going to be in Anaheim, California in August. And so that's really fun. That's all about diversity representation in fiction, particularly really promoting indie authors that are
some huge names for anyone who hasn't looked them up yet. Like literally anyone who's anyone at this point is going to be at Steamy LitCon.
Yes, it's a big conference. So that'll be out in Anaheim in August. That's going to be a ton of fun. One of my friends, a monster romance writer, Cleo Evans, is going to be there. Cleo and I met last year. And so both of us are like, we were like fangirling that we're going to get to see each other again.
That's funny because I was actually going to compare your series to her series.
Yeah.
In terms of like really just mixing it up with the pairings. Because Cleo Evans also does MM, MF, MFM, FFM, like in her Creature Cafe series.
Yes, yes. I'm such a Cleo Evans fan, Cleo Evans stan for sure. So it's going to be a ton of fun that I get to see Cleo at that conference. But yeah, there's going to be so many writers, so many writers, so many queer positive writers that are going to be there. All different kinds of diversity, though, will be represented. So that's going to be a ton of fun. And then in October, I will be in Charleston, South Carolina for, it's called Lust in the Low Country. And that's going to be a really fun one as well. That is going to be highlighting a lot of indie authors and newer authors. And in particular, kind of like a vein of that one is there's a whole genre of fiction that is people that kind of write in that area of the United States, right? So small town romances or Charleston romances. But for me, it's only about a 4-hour drive. And Charleston is so, so much fun. It's such a cool city. If you're US based and you want a fun one to go to, they are still selling tickets to Lust in the Low Country, but there'll be panels. Friday will be author panels. Saturday will be signing events. And I am working because Michaela's here. I can tell you, Michaela, I am working. Australia has been so, so good to me, and I am working on, it'll be 2024, but I am going to be coming to Australia in 2024. Right. So we're just,
we're having a glass of wine. That's all I've heard. Yes. I've just heard
a can of wine.
You know what? In Australia, we drink wine out of the bag, baby. It's called a goon sack. Get fucking ready for it. But I think as well, like you'll be fine with the climate. I have a British friend who's, well, Hannah Grace, author of Icebreakers, is coming in December. I was like, bitch, you're gonna fucking die. Like Florida, Australia weather, similar. So
in December, Australia, that's your summer.
You'll be sweating your cunt out, like honestly, no matter when you come. So get ready for it.
You're gonna need to fan her. Yeah, you're just gonna need to have like an ice pack for her neck.
I'm actually worried.
Yeah. My Florida self, I can handle it. Yeah. Right. But yeah, Australia has been so, so good to me. So I have a bunch of fans in Australia and they've been feeding me information about some of the different upcoming author events. And so 100% 2024, be there, be square. I'm coming to Australia and I will let you know when I have the official timeline for that. But yeah, amazing. It's happening.
That's so exciting.
We have gone cool. I was like, we'll maybe around 30 minutes this time. No, We have gone super long, but I think it was such an amazing conversation. And
I'm the
I think
worst.
We talked about everything. I love it. Like, we have dissected the book. We talk so much about the book, I don't feel like we spoiled anything somehow.
Yeah.
Except unless you wanted to be surprised by dick piercings. In which case, sorry.
I went way more into politics this time, and I'm sorry. I can't help myself. Cut out whatever you want.
We are here for it. We are here for it. We don't like to pressure authors to talk about politics, but if they're open to talking about their, you know, it's relevant to exactly what you're writing about. So yeah. It's not like, you know, we went off on random. Honestly, this was more on topic than Kayla and I normally are. So.
We are like two fucking cats wandering around sniffing each other's assholes. Honestly, that is like the perfect. We have one brain cell and we share it. We just punt it back to each other like a game of Pong. Seriously.
Honestly, that should be. Michaela's working on a new logo for us. And it should just be two cats sniffing each other's buttholes.
Yeah, which she says, it's me and Canva fighting for my life. Like, I'm just like, oh.
But for everyone listening, next week we are going to be discussing mine and Michaela's favorite hockey romances. We're really going to be breaking it down. And last night, Emily gave us some of hers that she really enjoyed before she started writing hockey, because she did share with us that she can't read what she is writing. So this is pre-writing. But we do have those written down, and we'll share those as well in the graphic for this episode. So if you want to know what Emily Rath was reading hockey-wise, you can get those. And yeah, so thank you so much for joining us tonight and last night and being such a good sport and bringing some
tomorrow
amazing
if you're lucky.
Yeah, tomorrow if this doesn't fucking record.
So make sure that you're following our Instagram. We'll link Emily's in the little graphic as well. So what is your Instagram? Give it a plug. Give your TikTok a plug. Give it all.
So my Instagram is Emily Rath author, and everything else is Emily Rath books. Fuck you, Instagram. October of last year, I was in the purge that happened of my Emily Rath books. Instagram got taken from me. They said I was selling counterfeit goods, and it was like a Halloween purge that happened. Anyway, so Instagram is Emily Rath author. Everything else is Emily Rath books. My website is Emily Rath books, all of it. So find me anywhere else as Emily Rath books.
And that's Rath, R-A-T-H, by the way, for anyone listening. Not it's Rath, German. Like
Wrath of Khan. Yes. Yeah.
There's no W in Emily Rath. Just
no
put
W.
And yeah. Katie Cakes, where can we find you? No one calls her that, by the way. It's just me. So you're not allowed to.
Obviously, Romantically Inclined and the Up the Smut pod is where you can find our episodes and everything for Up the Smut, especially if you're coming from Emily to listen to this episode and you like our banter. You're welcome to keep listening to next week's episode about more hockey. We also have an MM episode, so if you're one of her fans who just read your first MM experience through Pucking Around, then you can listen to that episode as well and get even more MM fix going on.
Where I talk about vampire incest and Kate just for 40 minutes, it's just her telling me everything and I'm just there with stars in my eyes. It's incredible.
Our episodes really switch off. It's like Michaela talking to me for an hour about something. or me talking at her for an hour, just rapid fire recommendations. That's
shit's
like
gonna go down when I say, let me take you on a journey. That's on the journey, but it's all fucking downhill from there. But I'm Michaela at Love Michaela Eve. Eve isn't my real middle name. I'm not gonna tell you what it is. Say hi to your dad from me. I love you. Stay smutty, stay slutty.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for having me.